Behind the Arc. A look around the country in college basketball. Behind the Arc. Hear about the week's biggest storylines, from blue bloods to mid-majors. Go in depth on the week's biggest matchups, bracketology, and which small conference schools should be on your radar. Behind the Arc. Here's your host, Joel Silverberg.
Welcome to the Behind the Arc podcast. I'm Joel Silverberg. I appreciate you taking the time to check out Behind the Arc, whether it's on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, 99.1thesportsanimal.com, or on our sports radio WNML app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to Behind the Arc. A lot to get to. Tennessee got some big schedule news earlier this week. A big matchup had mentioned could be a possibility last week on the podcast about what could happen with the SEC Big 12 Challenge. Tennessee got its answer against Kansas for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. So it would be the third season in a row that the Vols take on the Jayhawks. That's not the only news coming out of Kansas, as the Greg Marshall situation at Wichita State seems to get a little bit more dicey for the longtime Shockers head coach. And we'll look at the other matchups too in the SEC Big 12 Challenge, because it's not just Tennessee and Kansas. There's some other really compelling matchups. And really, I think they did a nice job at spacing this out, even for maybe the less marquee matchups in this challenge expected to come in late January. It seems like we could be getting a really competitive field. I know they try to do this every year, but this season it really feels like there's some really good balance here between the SEC and the Big 12. So we'll start with Tennessee and Kansas, because this is awesome for Tennessee to be able to get a chance at Kansas again after the Vols went into Allen Fieldhouse last year, had a fantastic showing, did not lose that game by much, looked really, really competitive. Udoka Azubuike, obviously he did what he normally does in big-time situations. Tennessee was not expected to go on the road and have the sort of success that it did. You got a lot of really good production out of Eve Pons, who had a career game against the Jayhawks. You saw a team that looked like, hey, it's going to bounce back from some of its lumps that it's taken early on in SEC play, and some of those bad losses in non-conference play, the loss to Cincinnati that didn't look very good at the time, and you know, the unfortunate loss to Memphis in a game that was just ugly, where Tennessee didn't shoot very well from three-point range. And there wasn't a whole lot of optimism going into that Kansas game. There was some because of the brawl, which it's hard to believe that Kansas-Kansas State brawl took place in this calendar year, but it did, and it happened the week before the Jayhawks played Tennessee in the SEC Big 12 Challenge a year ago. And so Tennessee ends up going to Fog Allen Fieldhouse, plays a really competitive game, loses, but has a lot of optimism moving forward for the rest of the season. Tennessee, of course, unfortunately followed that up with a loss to Texas A&M, and that turned out to be a much better Texas A&M team at the end of the season than what we were thinking at the time. I thought at the beginning of the year that was going to be the worst team in the SEC. TJ Starks had just been lost for the year, was suspended after dealing with an ankle injury. Buzz Williams, first-year head coach at Texas A&M, I thought it's just going to take him a while to really get things rolling. He did a fantastic job getting that team to be a middle-of-the-pack SEC team. They weren't going to go to the NCAA tournament, but Texas A&M, definitely a team that you couldn't sleep on by the time we got to February. So that ended up not being as bad of a loss, but the way that the ratings were looking at the time, I think it was showing that just wasn't a little loss that Tennessee really needed to take, especially considering all the optimism coming away from a narrow loss to Kansas. But we look ahead now, Tennessee's loss to Kansas in back-to-back seasons. The game, of course, a couple years ago was a loss where Grant Williams fouls out. Tennessee just doesn't get the shots to fall that it needs down the stretch. It had an opportunity to knock off the Jayhawks, didn't do it, and Tennessee kind of bounced back because of the big win over Gonzaga. Grant Williams fouls out again. Admiral Schofield goes off, starts hitting deep three-pointers, and suddenly Tennessee's knocking off one of the top teams in the country, and Tennessee then becomes one of the top-ranked teams in the country and holds the number one ranking for a month throughout the course of the season. So a lot of optimism for this matchup because of how competitive Tennessee has been with Kansas. And even in some of these lesser years with Rick Barnes' teams, when Rick Barnes hasn't had the squad that has shown consistently, hey, this is going to be a team that's easily going to make the NCAA tournament, Tennessee's, they've had good games against Kansas. They've had some good games against North Carolina. And while a lot of these have been losses, they have had competitive games against blue blood programs. And of course, the wins over Kentucky. Rick Barnes has had a handful of those since coming to Knoxville. So Tennessee has not shied away, whether it's a team that's expected to compete for a Final Four like it is this year, or a team that is expected to have to scratch and claw for a spot in the NCAA tournament period like it was a season ago. Tennessee has always shown up in these big games under Rick Barnes. And for the Vols to get a chance at the Jayhawks for the third year in a row, that's going to be really encouraging and really exciting for Tennessee fans. So you know the Vols are going to have a matchup against Kansas. This one is going to be at Thompson Bowling Arena. What is the fan situation going to look like? Don't know. Fortunately, that game takes place in late January, so we'll have an opportunity to get a feel for how everything's going to roll. You're seeing in the NFL, more and more teams are starting to have fans. Teams have plans in place to allow more fans as the season gets later into its progression. Maybe we see that with college basketball. And so maybe if we don't have fans at Thompson Bowling Arena early on in the season, maybe we have more by the time we get to January 30th and that matchup between the Volunteers and the Jayhawks. But this is a really solid Kansas team that for the first time in a while is not going to be expected to win the Big 12. Baylor, of course, is widely considered a top three team in the country. Gary Parrish updating his top 25 and one from earlier today has Kansas at number 7. So he's had them as a consistent top 10 team. Tennessee sitting at 12, Kentucky at 13. More on the Wildcats in just a moment. But Devon Dotson had decided to enter the draft, even though he had a couple seasons of eligibility remaining. So not having Udoka Azubuike means the Jayhawks don't have their top two scorers. But you still have OJ Agbaji, Marcus Garrett, David McCormick, Christian Braun, a lot of firepower coming back from last year's team. The name that stands out to me the most is actually Marcus Garrett because of how solid he is on the perimeter defensively, really provides a good spark for them. And that's with what Tennessee is expected to do offensively this year, especially in the post, having Marcus Garrett to be able to limit what Tennessee could potentially do in perimeter play. And that's an area where Tennessee needs to improve offensively greatly. And guys like Victor Bailey Jr., who's transferred from Oregon, is finally eligible. Santiago Vescovi, Josiah Jordan James, and of course, newcomers Jaden Springer, Keon Johnson. Those guys are expected to help Tennessee in the three-point shooting department. But Marcus Garrett is the type of player that can turn an offense into being one-dimensional and making a team go through the post. Now, without Azubuike, does Kansas have somebody that can limit John Fulkerson and Eve Pons inside? And EJ Anasicki, I don't know if you saw the video that the Tennessee Vol basketball Twitter account posted, but EJ Anasicki pulled off a nice turnaround jumper in practice over Eve Pons and created some separation there. And so Anasicki, still, it's one highlight, it's in practice, but you pulled that move off over the reigning SEC player, defensive player of the year. I think Tennessee's got a lot of excitement for some of these big matchups. There's a reason that Tennessee is widely being expected to win the Southeastern Conference. John Rothstein has Tennessee as his favorite to win it. Gary Parrish has had Tennessee as his highest-ranked SEC team. Chris Dortch, who joined the podcast last month, believes Tennessee's a top-five team in the country. He's more bullish on them than most analysts across the country. So a lot of people really like Tennessee, and there's a reason why. It's not just the core that they have coming back with Fulkerson, Pons, Vescovi, James, so many key players from last year's team. It's these newcomers that have already shown they can do some things. The transfers in Bailey and Anasicki, the newcomers in Johnson, Corey Walker, and Springer, and Tennessee's already made a bit of a splash on the recruiting trail with a 5-star and a 4-star commitment for the class of 2021. This is a really exciting year for Tennessee basketball. Expectations are going to be high. I feel like I'm probably a broken record because I've said that a lot during the course of this offseason, but the season is now just a little more than a month away from getting underway, and we're talking about in another 3 months the Kansas Jayhawks coming to Knoxville in what could be the biggest home game of the season. And that's a resume builder, and that's the type of game that Rick Barnes, you know, some people may think, oh man, we drew Kansas out of the Big 12 for the SEC Big 12 Challenge. I guarantee you that's probably who Rick Barnes wanted. He wants the toughest competition throughout the course of his non-conference schedule. They always schedule a tough non-conference schedule. You've seen that with matchups against Kansas in the past, Gonzaga. Gonzaga's on the schedule this year, by the way, so you're talking about two top 10 teams, two preseason top 10 teams anyway, already on Tennessee's schedule for this season. And while we're not sure how many non-conference games are actually going to get played due to the pandemic, Rick Barnes is trying to get as tough a schedule as he can. And Wisconsin, also widely considered a top 10 team, that was a team that was on Tennessee's schedule. They're still trying to figure out if they can get that game played, be a rematch from last year when Wisconsin beat Tennessee late in the non-conference portion of the schedule. So Tennessee going up against Gonzaga in the Jimmy V Classic, now they're going up against another top 10 team in Kansas in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And while we're on that topic of top 15 teams, Kentucky getting some big news earlier this week as they found out Wake Forest transfer Olivier Saar has been ruled eligible immediately, along with Rhode Island transfer Jacob Toppin. That's Obi Toppin's brother. And so now Calipari has two experienced players to add to that great recruiting class that he has coming in from the class of 2020. So Saar, a 7-foot, 250-pound forward who averaged nearly 14 points and 9 rebounds per game last season at Wake Forest. And it's unfortunate for Steve Forbes, the former ETSU head coach, that he didn't stay at Wake Forest, because I'm sure Forbes could have really used Saar's services in the ACC. But Saar electing to go to Kentucky, he's going to be expected to make a really big impact right away for the Wildcats, considering there isn't a whole lot of veteran presence on that team, not a lot of experience. It's going to be a team full of freshmen, five-star freshmen, McDonald's All-Americans that are going to have to come in and carry a big portion of the load right away for John Calipari's team. So Tennessee getting Kansas January 30th in the SEC Big 12 Challenge in Thompson Bowling Arena should be a great matchup. Great to see the schedule getting tougher for Tennessee. It's the way that Rick Barnes likes it. Have a chance to build your resume. Can't get too upset about losses when you're the selection committee either, when you're playing against teams like Kansas and Baylor and all these other top teams, Gonzaga, Wisconsin, on a regular basis. So I think Tennessee fans have a lot to be excited about, because it's going to be a tough schedule, but this is a good Tennessee basketball team that can handle it. So more on the SEC Big 12 Challenge coming up in the third segment of the podcast. Greg Marshall, what's going on at Wichita State? We'll talk about that more next here on the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal. Thank you again for taking the time to check out the Behind the Arc podcast. Again, I'm at Joel Silverberg on Twitter. If you have any college basketball questions you'd like me to answer, I'll get to them on the next edition of Behind the Arc. But what's happening at Wichita State right now? Greg Marshall, I mentioned earlier this month, in serious hot water with some allegations stemming from his time at Wichita State, of where he's been the coach since 2007, about serious verbal abuse of players, just conduct that is absolutely inappropriate, putting his hands on players, yelling at players, berating them. And look, we see sports coaches all the time yell and use profanity in a practice setting. And to a degree, a lot of players are used to it, but it sounds like Greg Marshall has crossed some serious lines. I mentioned one of the incidents before about him punching a player in the back as he was walking away after Marshall threw him out of practice. Well, now players from Winthrop, who played under Marshall for the 9 seasons that he was at Winthrop before he went to Wichita State, have spoken out and said, yeah, this stuff that the Wichita State players are saying, this sounds about right, because we went through it ourselves. There are incidents of Marshall ripping a player for having to take prescription medication for a mental health issue. There are incidents of him putting his hands on players, running after players after throwing them out of practice, berating players on the bus after a loss, failing to give players a post-game meal after they lost a game back in 1999. Just a number of incidents that are wildly inappropriate, berating a player whose father wrote a letter to the athletic director expressing concern about some of the things their son had said about what Marshall was doing during practice and the way that he was conducting his program. I'm going to be honest with you. It is, at the time I'm recording this, it is Thursday, October 22nd. It's about 9:50 p.m. Eastern time. Right before I did this podcast, I was checking again and again to make sure that Greg Marshall had not been fired and that I was missing it, because as of now, Marshall hasn't been fired. And I'm asking the question, why has Greg Marshall not been fired? Along with a bunch of other inappropriate slurs that have been used towards players, his overall demeanor, the way that he treats players in his program, there is no reason. I realize that Wichita State is taking its time to do a thorough investigation. The fact that players from Wichita State and Winthrop have both spoken out about a coach that has been successful, there's no reason for me to believe. It's going to be hard for me to believe that this stuff is all just a flat-out lie. I can't believe that that's really the case. And players seem surprised that higher-ups in the athletic department seemed unaware of this. Players seem surprised that people hadn't spoken out before. All of this is just really disturbing. It's really unfortunate. And we've been asking ourselves for years, how has Greg Marshall not gotten another job outside of Wichita State? Why hasn't he taken the Louisville job when it's come open? Why didn't he take, you know, the Texas job when it came open? What other jobs in the Big 12 and the ACC? All these other power conference jobs, really good jobs at different schools. The UCLA job. Why has he ended up not getting some of these jobs when he's been so successful? Not just successful at Wichita State. Wichita State is what's put him on a national spotlight. But when he was at Winthrop, he was there for 9 seasons. He went to the NCAA tournament 7 times. He took a team that won 7 games the year before he got there and took them to the NCAA tournament with pretty much nearly the same roster. So that only happens because of coaching. And his players in some of these private interviews, according to the Undefeated's release report, The Athletic, different outlets, ESPN, the players have acknowledged he's a great coach. And I don't doubt that. I don't doubt that Greg Marshall is one of the best basketball minds in the country. But this is unnecessary to have success in a collegiate athletic program. And I understand the purpose of tough love. I understand that coaches are going to be hard on you. I mean, here in Knoxville, you know, we kind of understand that with Pat Summitt, that she just was... she wanted to get the best out of her players. But we also understood that you didn't hear about this sort of conduct within the Lady Vols basketball program. You don't hear about this sort of conduct within programs like Duke and North Carolina. Coach K, Coach Williams, they don't do stuff like this. And Greg Marshall doesn't need to do stuff like this in order to have success. And I think... too often when we hear about incidents like this, it's just believed that everybody wants to kind of turn the other cheek to it and turn a blind eye to it as a way of saying, well, this is the price that you pay in order to have success in college. No, you don't. That's not true. And what these players have had to go through is horrible. Well, players at Winthrop, players at Wichita State, Antoine Carr, who is a former Wichita State player. He played for them back in the late 70s, early 80s, was a top 10 pick in the NBA, has his number retired by Wichita State, said, if this stuff is true, he should be done. And there's no reason to tolerate claims of physical and mental abuse. And Carr, who was an All-American at Wichita State, said his time leading Wichita State should be over. Greg Marshall should be. If this stuff turns out to be true, if they're accurate, there's no reason for him to continue coaching. And that's coming from somebody that obviously played decades before Marshall ever got there, but somebody that obviously cares about the Shockers program. So there is no reason that Marshall should continue to have a job. If he is coaching the Shockers on November 25th when the season starts, I will be very, very surprised. We'll come back. We'll talk about the rest of the SEC Big 12 Challenge, kind of preview some of these matchups. Really good ones, too, by the way, not just Tennessee and Kansas. So more about that next with the SEC and Big 12 Challenge on the Behind the Arc podcast on the Sports Animal. The SEC Big 12 Challenge is set. The Big 12 has typically gotten the better hand of the SEC in most years since this challenge was created, but 4 of the combined 7 events have gone in favor of the Big 12, but the SEC is getting better, and that's why some of these matchups are going to be very compelling. So we've mentioned Tennessee and Kansas. That's a top 15 matchup, could be a top 10 matchup by the time we actually get to late January. But looking at some of these other ones, and part of it is a matter of, okay, you got two programs that could be moving in the right direction, may not be moving in the right direction, but that's going to be kind of a good indication of where they're at. That's Texas A&M and Kansas State. Buzz Williams, I think, has the Aggies going in the right direction. He just might need a little bit more time to really get it to where he needs it to be. He took Virginia Tech to the Sweet 16 and had them as a really, really competitive basketball team. Had some wins over Duke in recent years. So he knows how to win basketball games against big-time teams. And Kansas State just isn't that program right now. But that's a game that you're looking at and thinking, okay, that's a game that we can get our players up for, being a part of the Big 12 Challenge and finding a way to go into Manhattan and come out with a win. Another one that's similar to that is TCU in Missouri. Konzo Martin hasn't had a ton of success since his first year at Mizzou. Again, he's had terrible, terrible injury luck, and with both the Porter brothers having injuries throughout their careers at Missouri, TCU, Jamie Dixon having to finding ways to have a really solid defensive team. At times last year, it looked like TCU could find its way on the bubble, just didn't work out towards the end in that stretch. In the Big 12, towards the end of the last season, didn't look like it was as deep as maybe it was being indicated, but TCU is a team that can surprise you at times and find a way to beat really good basketball teams. They play with a lot of speed, play with really good defense. So a good barometer for each team, Missouri and TCU, to see exactly how they stack up against the rest of their own conference. Some of the bigger matchups, I really like Auburn at Baylor. Baylor, and that's going to be a tough one for Auburn to go on the road and beat the Bears in Waco. But when you look at Scott Drew's team, he's got a ton of talent. They're going to be loaded. Auburn has a great recruiting class, but they've lost a lot of talent from last year. How good are they going to be, really? That's going to be a nice test for Bruce Pearl to be able to go into an environment like that, and we'll see how many fans are in attendance, but to still go on the road to Waco against one of the top teams in the country is going to show how well this young team is going to be able to compete in the SEC. Florida at West Virginia, that's a game that Mike White just needs. You can't go into a situation like that, and Coach Huggins is going to do what he does, and he's going to have success. You know, a couple years ago when Tennessee faced the Mountaineers, that was a game that Tennessee was expected to win. Florida is going in and playing West Virginia in Morgantown. That's a game that Mike White needs. But that Florida team was such a disappointment last year. You have a chance to go and make a statement against a really good conference team in the Big 12 and playing a team from a strong conference in West Virginia, and maybe they're not going to be expected to, you know, go all the way to having this high standard of back to where they were a few years ago. And it did look like they were making some progress last year, but that is a game that I feel like is going to be very telling of Mike White's season, because this could be the year that if things don't go according to plan, you see Mike White coaching somewhere other than Gainesville. Alabama at Oklahoma, Arkansas at Oklahoma State. So Arkansas obviously got some bad news earlier in the offseason with Isaiah Joe opting to stay in the NBA draft. Alabama got some horrible news earlier this week when one of its incoming freshmen, a top 60 recruit, was lost for the year with an injury in practice earlier this week. So Alabama going up against the Sooners, Arkansas going up against Oklahoma State. I think for both of those SEC teams, you're trying to figure out, hey, we potentially could have been top five in the SEC. Where are we looking at now? Arkansas, I don't think, is there anymore, because I thought they were really thin behind Isaiah Joe. I thought they needed him to be able to maintain that spot. You've got Iowa State at Mississippi State. Mississippi State, without Reggie Perry, just is not going to be the same team this year. They've lost some talent. I don't feel great about the Bulldogs going into this upcoming season, but we'll see what sort of job is done there in Starkville to make up for that. Texas Tech at LSU could be a lot of fun. Let's see if Will Wade's still the coach. Who knows what could happen over the course of the year. But LSU's got a lot of returning talent. Texas Tech lost David Moretti. I don't know how I feel about them in depth as a whole. Jamias Ramsey's also gone. I think, and to me, Texas Tech was not a tournament team last year. I know a lot of bracketologists thought that they would be in there. I think Joe Lunardi had him in. I think Jerry Palm had him on the outside looking in. And that was, I was in the same camp as Palm. I did not think Texas Tech, they had some bad losses. They did not have a lot of great wins. I realize that the stature of being the national runner-up the year before and having some good wins early on in non-conference play carries some weight. but losing to DePaul at the time didn't seem like it was a huge deal. By the time we got to February, that DePaul loss looked really bad. And Texas Tech had other bad losses just like it going along with it. I did not see that. I did not see that Red Raiders team as a tournament team. I just didn't. And I love Chris Beard. I think he's been fantastic. What he has done with Texas Tech in a short period of time after coming over from Arkansas Little Rock, he has been great. He is one of the best up-and-coming coaches in the country. They play great defense. Love the way they play basketball. That was not a tournament team last year, and that could be a tough test for them going to Baton Rouge and taking on LSU. So looking at all those matchups, the bigger ones, Auburn-Baylor, Texas Tech-LSU, then you've got Texas and Kentucky. And for Texas, that's kind of the measuring stick for them. It's, okay, are we finally getting back? Are we finally pushing forward? Because ever since Rick Barnes has left, you know, there's been this situation. Okay, Shaka Smart, is it going to work out or not? The rest of the Big 12 looking around at what they're doing. You see Texas Tech having a lot of success. That's not good for Texas. You see Texas A&M, sure, different conference, but still, Texas A&M, you fight for recruits with Texas A&M. How is that going to work out if Texas A&M is starting to have success and Texas just isn't getting there to that level yet to compete with the Aggies? So I think it's a really important year for Texas. That game could be a pretty big indication of where, of just how competitive the Longhorns can be against the best teams in college basketball. For Kentucky, going up against a big program, they get that game at home. That's a game, on just looking at it on paper right now, that's a game I think Kentucky should win. I'm not saying it's going to be make it or break it for the Wildcats, but that's a game looking at it where if you're trying to play the Louisville game, if you're trying to play a bunch of other top tier, you know, they're going to play in the Champions Classic, a bunch of other top tier non-conference games. That's one that I would think, yeah, if you're Kentucky, don't lose that basketball game. I think for Texas, if anything, Texas has a lot more to gain from that matchup than the Wildcats do. So the SEC Big 12 Challenge, it's set. It looks like a tough draw for the SEC in some cases, but I like the SEC's chances in some of these games. So we'll see how the season shapes out. I'm excited that we're talking about non-conference basketball games because remember, a few months ago, it looked like, yeah, you may not be able to have a non-conference schedule. I think we're seeing more and more, and the rest, the NCAA, other conferences, they're acknowledging more and more, we need a non-conference schedule. You need to play the non-conference games. You need to have a more accurate metric to figure out how to have a properly seeded NCAA tournament. And you certainly can't afford to miss the NCAA tournament for the second year in a row. I appreciate you taking the time to check out the Behind the Arc podcast. This is fun, getting to talk about non-conference matchups, the SEC Big 12 Challenge. We got preseason tournaments. You're seeing smaller conferences lay out their schedule for the upcoming season. You're seeing, you know, I think it was the Big West earlier this week that laid out its scheduling plan. And okay, maybe we're not getting super fired up over Hawaii and UC Irvine, but the point is that even the mid-majors are figuring it out. They're going to figure out a way to play some of these games, and you know, maybe we do end up having March Madness after all, and let's see if we have some mid-majors that spoil the party and pull off something big. But this is a lot of fun to be able to have this conversation, especially now that you have another big-time matchup for Tennessee with already two, potentially three preseason top 10 teams on the non-conference schedule. Should be a lot of fun. Basketball in Knoxville. We're a month away. We're just a little more than a month away. It's October 22nd right now as I'm recording this. Season starts November 25th. This is exciting. Let's get ready for the college basketball season. Thank you again for listening. Again, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, feel free to hit that subscribe button, hit a 5-star rating, leave a review if you leave a question in the review, or if you leave me a question at Joel Silverberg on Twitter, be happy to answer it in next week's edition of the Behind the Arc podcast. Thank you again for listening to the Behind the Arc podcast on The Sports Animal.
Behind the Arc with Joel Silverberg on The Sports Animal.